The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Quarter after eight, it is Open Phones on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday, which is always a lot of fun. 770-5633-770-KMD. And the people who are on phone, I will get to you here in just a moment. I want to share an article that I thought was such an interesting read, given that Oregon has been all in on the marijuana culture for a number of years. Now, this is in the New York Times. New York Times, hard left newspaper of communist record in the United States, tends to drive the journalism, I put that in scary air quotes, of many other news organizations. Still, even today. And the title of it is, As America's Marijuana Use Grows, So Do the Harms. I don't know if I've ever seen something questioning the marijuana addicts out there until now in the New York Times. Now, maybe they've been there before, I just never saw it. But it says, the drug, legal in much of the country, is widely seen as non-addictive and safe. For some users, these assumptions are dangerously wrong. And so they go down this. This was written by Megan Tuhey, Daniel Ivory, and Carson Kessler. So Kessler. A lot of big people involved, reporters on this one. And they bring up the case of, in mid-coast Maine, this is in Maine, a pediatrician sees many teenagers so dependent on marijuana that they consume it practically all day, every day. And she said, it's a remarkably scary amount. From Washington State to West Virginia, psychiatrists are now treating rising numbers of people whose use of the drug has brought on delusion, paranoia, and other symptoms of psychosis. And in the emergency departments of small community hospitals and large academic medical centers alike, physicians encounter patients with severe vomiting induced by the drug. It's a potentially devastating condition that once was rare, but now they say is common. The patients look so sick, said a doctor in Ohio, who described them writhing around in pain. As marijuana legalization has accelerated across the country, doctors are contending with the effects of an explosion in the use of the drug and its intensity. A $33 billion industry has taken root, turning out an ever-expanding range of cannabis products so intoxicating that they bear little resemblance to the marijuana available a generation ago. Tens of millions of Americans use the drug for medical or recreational purposes, most of them without problems. But with more people consuming more potent cannabis more often, a growing number, mostly chronic users, are now enduring serious health consequences. The accumulating harm is broader and more severe than previously reported. And gaps in the state regulations, limited public health messaging, and federal restraints on research have left many consumers, government officials, and even medical practitioners in the dark about such outcomes. Again and again, the New York Times finds dangerous misconceptions. Many users believe, for instance, that people cannot become addicted to cannabis, but millions are. About 18 million people, nearly a third of all users 18 and over, have reported symptoms of cannabis use disorder, according to estimates from a unique data analysis conducted by the New York Times by a Columbia University epidemiologist. That would mean they continue to use the drug despite significant negative effects on their lives. Of those, about 3 million people are considered addicted. That would be like 1 out of 100. Roughly speaking, all right? Estimates are based on responses to a 2022 U.S. National Drug Use Survey from people who reported any cannabis consumption within the previous year. I think that's really interesting because I'm on the email trees of the various cannabis legalization organizations, and they're all talking about, hey, we're almost going to get it done here. We're going to get it done here. We're going to get it done there. And New York Times, I have no doubt, were some of the leftists that were out there saying that this was a good idea back in the day. Oregon was one of the early adopters, as the case might be. And now look what we have. And I don't know if you know anybody that has had that kind of paranoia and is a chronic pot user. The last guy I knew who was a super chronic pot user is now a drug counselor in California. His name is Bill Stairs. And back in the 1980s, when I was DJ in Modesto, California, he was a music guy over on KFIV FM. I was on the AM. He was on the FM. And there was never a day, never a time of the day in which he was not stoned. And he smoked from the moment he got up till the day he went to bed. And that's just the way it was. He'd smoke in the studio, too. I remember it well. Yeah, they were off in a little trailer, and, you know, those were the rock and roll dope smoking DJs, you know, and so that we didn't think too much about that. But I can assure you that the marijuana that Bill was smoking back then, back 1982, was probably a lot less than what we're getting now commonly in the dispensaries. But I don't know, awful lot of dispensaries here in the state of Oregon, so it must be making some people happy, or is it feeding the addiction? I don't know. I don't have a conclusion for this at this point, but I just find it interesting that we're now starting to see what the right was concerned about with the rise of marijuana culture. And now the left wing is starting to see that. 20 minutes after 8, 770-5633, Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Let me go to the phones. Let me go to line one. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Good morning. This is Colleen Martin.
Oh, hey, Colleen. How are you this morning?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Bill?
Doing fine. What's going on?
Oh, I was just checking in, listening to your show, and we actually have one family member and one friend that have been long-time marijuana users, and that paranoia is not with them at all. But that wasn't what I called.
Oh, that's good. That's good to know. I'm just wondering if you knew, because now I knew Bill, the guy Bill that I knew, he didn't have it. Well, at least I don't think he did. But there was always kind of a glassy-eyed stare that he gave me. We knew.
But I just want to congratulate and thank all the voters out there for getting out early. It feels like a lot of, I know we'll probably get the stats this morning, sometime today, for the voter turnout so far. But I think everybody's out there.
Now, you're running for a county commission position. Which one now?
Position 2 in Josephine County.
Okay.
Yeah. And I went out canvassing Saturday, and I was amazed at how many people have already voted. It was great. I'm really proud of our community.
Well, there was kind of a saying this time around, Colleen, that do not bank your vote, do not wait. Just get it in, get it done. Of course, sometimes that bites you, because then they find out some things about candidates leading up to the election that would make you wish you didn't do the vote early, but I digress. You know, how would you differentiate yourself from your opponent in this race, since you happen to call in?
Yeah, thanks. I differentiate myself because I've been a really long time business person in this community, serving the community on multiple different types of boards. I have been invested in Josephine County for my whole life as a leader of. If you ask most people in the community, they'll say I am definitely a community leader. Both of us are in real estate. We have that similarity. We both have different backgrounds in our lives. Similar. We have a lot of similarities in some ways. But, you know, I just think I'm a stronger leader, definitely a stronger community supporter. I'm definitely a conservative.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about the recall going on Commissioner West? Do you think that's good policy?
You know, I think there were a lot of people that had been hurt by some of the decisions that the commissioner's office are making, and they have every right to make those decisions to do that recall. Hmm. Personally, I've tried to stay away from that. I am don't think it's in my best interest.
So you're not on the committee or anything like that? You weren't part of the committee?
No, I've never been on that committee.
Okay.
I know people. Getting very familiar with many of the people.
I know it's really split things up in Joe County. It really has, and and I'm just not a fan of recalls unless we're talking about big things. In fact, I'd even disagreed with the Republican Party when they tried to recall Chris Bristol, or not Chris Bristol. I'm sorry, Sarah Bristol.
Sarah.
I'm sorry. I was talking about Chris on the newspaper, but Mayor Sarah Bristol. Not that there wouldn't be issues, but I think we burn a lot of energy sometimes, a lot of political capital sometimes involving recalls that might be better spent maybe just running better candidates in the future. But that's just me. That's just me. It's your community. I get it.
I agree with you. The recalls are not effective oftentimes, and they cost it does, especially this time of year when we're already in an election, it seems like it's even caused a little more confusion.
I know. You think like you're recalling it on this particular election ballot, and you're not. All it would be was whether or not there would be one later this year. All right. Anything else on your mind this morning, Colleen?
No, I just thank you. My husband and I listen to your show a lot, and I just want to salute to all those people that have voted, our veterans that are out there, and thanks Thanks for all you do.
All right. Appreciate the call. Thank you. You take care. Colleen Martin. It is 8:24. Let me go to, we got Matt. Hello, Matt. How are you doing?
Hey, Bill. I'm doing all right, man. I was going to call Thursday on conspiracy theory, and then we were talking about pebble in the shoe. Since this is no longer a conspiracy of mine, and it's become a pebble in my shoe, I'm going
Hey, Matt, could you back off your phone just a little bit? Just a little bit.
How's that?
A little less loud.
Better?
One more
that
time.
Better?
Yes, much better. Okay, gotcha.
Okay, so I'm still stuck on this selective services document that I found when I was trying to figure out what the age range was.
Yes.
And when I looked under immigrants, and it said refugee, parolee, and asylee immigrants and undocumented immigrants are required to register with selective services.
And that astounded me when you sent that document to me the other day. I had no idea that if you're an illegal alien here, you're not supposed to be here in the first place. You're supposed to register for the draft. And I'm thinking to myself, what could be that political thought process behind that? Because I got to tell you, the last people that I would want in the military being able to turn guns on we the people, you know, if things went got sideways at some point, would be some illegal alien that broke the law to get in here in the first place. I don't get this. What about you?
I like to break things down.
Okay.
The idea that we would have somebody register for a draft, and then, you know, let's say a draft is declared, you know, mm-hmm. we're going to send a bunch of soldiers over to Ukraine or wherever. We're going to take illegal aliens, and specifically it says undocumented.
So undocumented meaning we have no documents on them. We don't know anything about them. We have no official ID, really.
Look, you and I both know that they don't vet anyone coming from these basically communist or terrorist or socialist countries, because those countries are not sharing information, and as Donald Trump says, not sending their best. They're sending their worst. So we have no document on them. That one of these people could be called up to serve our nation, handed a weapon, right? Weapons of war, as the left likes to say, and teach them how to kill if they don't already know. So to me, well, here's what I did. Since I called, here's what I've done. I've contacted several senators, U.S. senators, U.S. congresspeople, staff, and I've read this to them. I've had them look up the document. Every one of their aides has said, oh, my God, I had no idea this existed.
I had no idea it existed until you told me. And it's been out there existing probably since, what, the Obama administration, right?
Well, so that's kind of what happened. So the first staff member I spoke to, it was actually for Byron Donalds in Florida, because he has a long arm when it comes to media reach. And the gal I spoke to said, well, let me look at something real quick before I turn it over to research. And right off the bat, she found some immigrant documents, and she says, okay, so in 2013 is the earliest I found this. And her comment to me was, that was during the Barack Obama administration, and she says, fundamentally change America.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that's what he was always talking about, fundamentally changing America. What would fundamentally change it more than to make sure that you don't have native-born Americans in the military? And then you're a little bit concerned because your populace gets a little too uppity. So you import lots of third world illegal aliens. You allow them in, require them to eventually sign up for the military. And maybe you use that as the carrot for the pathway to citizenship, right? I mean, they're already doing that. You know, we know.
That's right. And I just want to point that the progression of this out, the progression of all of these military issues in regards to recruitment out. So we have a terrorist attack on 9/11.
Yep.
You have a lot of people rush in, including some very famous people. The one football player who died turns out friendly fire. But mm-hmm. you have all these people who enlisted, and including Tulsi Gabbard, by the way, who also says that's part of the reason she enlisted.
That's right.
Then it turns into not just Afghanistan, which a lot of people felt was a righteous war. And then we go into Iraq, right? We kill Saddam Hussein. The whole place goes.
Who, by the way, had nothing to do with 9/11, right?
That's right, nothing. So then, fast forward to COVID, you begin to force our military servicemen and women to get a vaccination many of them did not want to get. So a lot of them, with very few years left in their, you know, to achieve full pension, leave early. One or two people wrote books about this. Then you have the woke agenda being pushed by our current defense secretary, Milley, some of these other lunatics at the top. They have done everything they can to purge what I would consider true patriots from the military. Mm-hmm. Then in 2013, which is, look, they'll do more research, and I asked them to get back to me, and if they do, I'll get back to you on this.
Please.
But then all of a sudden, we're going to go ahead and add registration for a draft, including illegal aliens, refugee status, asylee status, and parolee status. I don't know how anybody could see this any differently. If I were to say there was one bright side to any of this, is that every single person who receives federal assistance, who's an illegal alien, is probably told, you're not getting a dime until you sign this form and you are registering for a draft.
Oh, I have no doubt that that's probably part of it. There's another wrinkle, though, that I want. You know Francine, who calls the show?
Yeah.
Right? Well, Francine sent me a message, and it has to do with what you were talking about. And she has an interesting theory. She had an interesting theory on this, that undocumented people in the military could be an excuse, in scary air quotes, for allowing them to vote since they're serving. What do you think?
I think that's true. I think all of that's true. Like I said, I could call on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, but this is no longer a conspiracy when in my hand.
You got it. You have it in your hands. The paper's right there. The law is in place. The rule's in place, rather. Not the law, but just the rule. Yeah. So
if there's one positive, it's this. It'll give Donald Trump a list of every single person who's come here illegally, every male from 18 to 25 years old. He would have a list. He could say, you know what? I saw that we're registering people for the draft. Give me that list. And then turn it over to ICE and say, here's your list. Go find them.
That's a very interesting point of view on that one. I was kind of surprised. I heard you talking a little bit to Lars about this yesterday. I was surprised he was so kind of not relaxed about it. But how would you describe the reaction? He was not as concerned as you were and as I think most people would be.
His initial reaction to me was shocking, to be honest. And I'm always polite. But he said, well, don't you think if they're going to be here illegally that they should contribute and they could serve? And I said, no. I said, do you really want to be in a foxhole with someone who was an illegal alien now trained to kill and they have a rifle? And at any time, I mean, you know, are we ever in foxholes anymore? Probably. But
yeah,
they could literally turn and begin shooting American soldiers.
Well, think about this. If you end up having a bunch of illegals, let's say that conspire at some point, and you could see the military people even having another side hustle. And not that there aren't side hustles, because we know there's corruption in the military right now, but even more, you have a bunch of people that do a side job working the cartel, right? How about that?
Well, Bill, this is the thing, undocumented. What's to prevent someone from any of the cartels, Sinaloa, you know, everybody knows the names, from Tren de Aragua, from MS-13, unless you're covered in tattoos, which, of course, people would say, this guy's probably MS-13.
Oh, no, but you see, they used to not permit that in the military. Now they do.
That's right. And so you could see where you could end up with a lot of really bad people.
We could have a semi-foreign-controlled military through the back door, through this policy.
It's shocking. So any of your listeners, go to Selective Services website and just type in, you know, age range or something like that. Or you could, this is what I did. I went into a search engine and just said Selective Services age range, and it pulled up the website for Selective Services, and I found the document immediately. It was really easy to find.
Yeah.
And just look at it. And I'm telling you, spread the word. Tell every one of your friends. This is a big deal. I mean, it is to me. I do not want my military filled with illegal aliens. I'm sorry. I just don't.
I can't say it any better than you did. Keep me in the loop on that one, man. All right, 770-5633. We go to line 3. Hi, it's Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Who's this?
Good morning, Todd in Central Point.
Hi, Todd.
Well, what Matt was talking about, that's been happening for years. Back when I was a peace officer in California, we were engaging gang members who had been cycled through our military, and many of them had illegal immigrant lineage. Mm-hmm. And that was amazing because they knew tactics that, you know, we barely could combat. But the reason why I called was the cannabis topic that you touched on, and I just want to reference, and I saved the article. It was from October 28th, 2020. Epic Times did a fantastic article on the effects of marijuana in the first state where it was truly legalized. That was Colorado.
Right.
And
we were number two, weren't we? Number two, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's so bad. Of course, I won't reference the whole article, even though I saved it. They were seeing so many more people coming into the ER room. And I'll just quote one little part here. One of the people in the ER said about one third of the people they saw in the ER smoked pot on a daily basis. And the doctors would tell them that this is what was causing their psychosis. And that people would always resist and say, oh, no, it's very healthy for you.
Uh-huh.
And then you also have the government being part of the money stream. So you have the taxes coming in from marijuana. So you don't want to interrupt that either. But I have a personal story about that. When I was working for state parks in California, I hired as just a seasonal aide one of my dispatcher's kids. Great kid, good looking, just handsome, wonderful, great family. Basic math, all you have to do is, you know, balance your till at the end of the day. We noticed after a while, he just couldn't do basic math. And one of my other seasonal workers was a mental health worker, and she really keyed in on it. She started asking him questions, and we were getting complaints from the public, too. He was just acting in a bizarre manner. And he started to drift into psychosis. We found out he'd been using really powerful marijuana when he was a teenager. And the Europeans have done so much more research on this than we have. The brain, especially with young males, hasn't matured until you're about 20 or 21. And powerful marijuana can cause permanent addiction and negative effects.
Yikes.
So we're gonna see more and more of this as time goes on.
Appreciate the call on that one. That is certainly of concern. I thought it was interesting, though, to see the New York Times jump on that, because I know that there were papers from the right that were, you know, involved on this and really kind of concerned. Interesting to see New York Times doing that, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. And but, you know, what concerns me is I drive around Medford here. I mean, let's say Blackbird, you know, where it is on West Main there.
Oh, yeah.
There are three cannabis places within a stone's throw of each other. It's like, how much pot are people smoking here? And obviously it's a lot.
Apparently enough to support a bunch of dispensaries, right? You know, obviously.
Exactly.
Yeah. Appreciate the call. 837. If you're on hold, I'll get right to you here. This is the Bill Myers Show on KMED 99.3 KPXG.
VM Auto Works is Southern Oregon's trusted Volkswagen and Audi dealership alternative. Pairing fact.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Call Bill now, 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
20 before 9. Open phones on Pebble in Your Shoe Tuesday. Here comes Brad. Brad, I had to get out of anytime I have an excuse to get out of polka, I'll do that with you, okay? All right?
Yeah, you make my morning running that, I'll tell you, buddy.
What's on your mind, huh?
Hey, twofold. First of all, because you're on the marijuana topic, I have several friends that had farms in their family in Samus Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a number of those farms are now marijuana manufacturing, I guess you'd call it, or growers. And I just met with one of them that's a friend of mine. He's retired now. But the consensus is, even though these guys are supporting local dispensaries, they're not making a lot of money. But the analysis is basically, to make money, you got to ship the stuff back east.
Oh, really?
Illegal.
So much for the, if you legalize cannabis in Oregon, you're going to get rid of the black market, right?
Exactly.
Doesn't make money. Okay. Interesting.
And the other thing, because I caught you before we got back on air. Dude, I got to know, how many different cities have you operated out of? Dude, you got an illustrious career.
Well, let's see. I've been here over for the last 20-something years, though, since 2001. But let's see. Started in Barstow. Then went to Modesto for a couple of years. Got out of Barstow really quick because it was such a hellhole as far as a job goes. You know, your first job in radio back then in Barstow was not great. But then Modesto, worked there a couple of years. Moved up to Seattle, tried to break in there, had to leave for a little bit. Then it was Sacramento at K-Pop FM. I think it's a rock station now. Then returned to KPLZ in Seattle from 1984 to about 1989. Left WNRJ in Pittsburgh, went back home for a little while after a divorce, came back out, programmed in Shelton, Washington at KMAS, then came down to KBOY in the early 1990s for about 6-7 years, went KZZE, programming rock there, KFGO in Fargo, KFGO FM, and then came back in 2001 here, and then this is where I've been ever since, and I love it. So I've been a little all over the place, a little bit, yeah.
You know, the guys like you that are as expert at their profession, there's not a lot of them left.
Well, give it a few more years and ChatGPT. You'll be listening to Bill Maier ChatGPT in the morning, and unlike me, he'll never screw up, okay?
Oh, that's encouraging. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. Let me go to Steve. Hey, Steve, on the marijuana deal. Go ahead.
Well, the deal you were talking about, the illegals in the military,
yes.
I had an experience way a long time ago, back during the Vietnam War. I was in Korea, and one of my job was to interview people who had gotten in trouble, and there was a young man whose name was Green, and he had just killed his CO. And I drew the short straw. I got to interview the guy. And you'd think he'd be upset, but he wasn't. He said, don't worry about it. He said, I'm from the south side of Chicago. And he said, that SOB yelled at me. And he said, where I come from, you don't let anyone disrespect you, because if you do, they'll kill you.
There's an issue of culture, right? The culture.
I wasn't going to live very long anyway, so this is just what's going to happen. The point is, the culture that you come from has a big effect on the person you are as a soldier.
Hmm.
And that was a good example of how, you know, you don't change a person's culture just by sending them through 13 weeks of basic and a month or so of AIT. They're still who they are. And, you know, that guy, he just took him out. And the thing about AI that you keep talking about,
by the way, I'm only kidding about that. I don't think they're replacing talk radio really well anytime soon, but who knows?
Well, I would agree with that, because if you study human history, and as far back as we know, when mankind learned to make bricks, and the first thing they started to do was build a tower to heaven, and that didn't work out so well. So they're trying to build a Tower of Babel. The concept that these folks are pushing is that AI will reach, quote unquote, singularity, where it will be so smart that it will become God.
So smart, though, by essentially ripping off humanity that trained it. I find that really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate the call. Thank you for that, Steve. Let me grab some other pebble in your shoe calls for Tuesday. Hi, who's this? Good morning.
Here, Bill, it's Lucretia.
Hi, Lucretia.
Hi. I wanted to talk about political correctness.
Okay, sure.
And it's because Bruce Carlson wrote a book, and his career was destroyed by the HIV bloodhounds, because he was saying there wasn't a virus. So mm-hmm. It was the guy that discovered AIDS. They called it a virus, but he was saying it wasn't a virus. Anyway, political correctness, he says, is a thought prison, a self-constructed jail of delusions, yet a prison engaged in destroying itself, guards and inmates together. An example would be, you talk to Indian on the left, and they just think carbon is absolutely what's causing all the problems. They think polio was caused by a virus, yet we know it was also absolutely linked to DDT. There was no virus. So anyway, what we now have is through this, they're basically going into a totalitarian society, because you can't talk outside the box. You've got ridiculous things, insane and things, self-loathing and suicidal things, but it's all because it's part of what is the correct political talk.
Which is why you can't succumb to that, though. And I know you don't.
No, I don't.
and I appreciate that, but you bring up the importance of speaking truth, and it's not always pleasant, and it's certainly not always rewarding, because, yeah, we're probably the ones that would be attacked first on this. I appreciate your call on that. We grab two more, and then we'll have to wrap up the pebble in your shoe calls for a little bit. Hi, who's this? Good morning.
Bill, John of Medford.
Hello, John.
Yeah, hey, Jennifer Strickland this morning, your guest, I Am a Woman guest, I like the quote that she had that says, "Your feelings are attached to the shame of your abuse." And I want to connect that with Trump derangement syndrome with some women.
Really?
Who have a visceral reaction, including to two gals that I kind of sparred with on social media last night. What I found very interesting is that both women were dedicating their lives to helping women give birth. They're doulas, they're empowered women who teach other women, you know, how to give really great, have a great birthing experience.
Yeah, and it's an honorable profession. It's great. So how, where do they battle with you, though?
Yeah, this is what's blowing my mind. So they both have decided they're not going to vote for Donald Trump. And one of them is a wife of a Christian pastor. And so I asked the one girl, I said, well, you know, what do you have against Trump? What's going on? She brought up a rough quote that Donald Trump said like 8 years before he got in office about a man grabbing a woman's you-know-what.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and that quote, sure.
This woman, who's devoted to bringing birth into the world, can't stand this. So what this tells me is that Trump reminds some women who have this visceral reaction of the poor choices with the men in their life.
Mm.
And Trump is the kind of the scapegoat representative of that.
The avatar of every bad man they ever dealt with. That's interesting.
Yeah. Huh. And I brought up, you know, Joe Biden, you know, the book his daughter wrote about Joe Biden taking showers with his daughter, Bill Clinton being Lewinsky'd under the Oval Office desk. See, that's the thing. Those guys know how to play that game right. They're evil at their core, but they don't show it and people don't see it or they don't want to see it. But Trump is, you know, he's right there at the top of the list for some women that have been traumatized.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Thanks for making that. I'll take one more call. And then we're going to get set for a 9-year 62 Real American Quiz, a little palate cleanser, as it were. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Hi, Bill. This is Vicki from the Applegate.
Hi, Vicki.
Well, first of all, you worked at KZZE. Oh, my God. I got to co-host one time with Rob King.
Oh, you did? Yeah. That was before Rob King ended up taking over the morning show.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to play the radio and win, like, all kinds of prizes. And Holly Davidson was going on vacation, and it was kind of me and this other guy named Sean that were like the top people that called.
Uh-huh.
And I found out that Sean was going to get to co-host with Ron, and I'm like, what the hell? I call him up and I'm like, I want to co-host. So I got to co-host from 6 a.m. till 10. I had a blast. It was so fun.
Yeah, well, I had a blast there back in the day, too. But I find it interesting. You know, I'm back. I'm on the same signal then that I was from 1997 to 99, you know. And when I, actually, 96, I think, is when I came to KZZE, 96 to 99, before going to Fargo for a couple of years before coming back. But, yep, back on the same frequency here, Vicki. Glad you had a good time, all right? Diner 60, thank you for the call, by the way, 770-5633. Diner 62 Real American Quiz. If you have not won this in the last 60 days, why don't you win it now? 770-5633, 770-KMED. And we'll play this here in just a minute and see if you can get that $20 gift certificate, get the third pound burgers, and so much more next. By the way, this portion of the program is sponsored by Valley View Nursery, the only nursery, I should say, here in Southern Oregon with online pricing. Head to valleyviewnursery.com. They are closer than you think. Great people.
At Siskiyou Pump Service and Rotary Drilling Company, we provide well water services to your home and business.
34 Crater Lake Avenue, Medford. Visit Good Guys Guns today. That's Good Guys Guns. Good Guys Guns. You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
854, Diner 62, Real American Quiz. Couple of pork chops, 8-ounce New York steak and eggs. That's on special right now on the weekends. And mornings between 6 and 9 during my show, for $11.15, you get a half ham special. It's half ham slice, big slice, and eggs and tatty. It's just wonderful. And you'll always get a great meal at Diner 62. Senior and kid menus available, too. Diner 62 is just south of White City. Highway 62. All right. Let me go to, who do I want to go to? Well, I think it is going to be Renee. Hi, Renee. How are you doing?
Hi. Good.
All right, Renee. It was tomorrow in history. A killer smog claimed all sorts of elderly victims. This happened in 1948. It was October 30th of 1948. A killer smog hovered over Denora, Pennsylvania. It claimed its first victim. Denora was a town of 14,000 people in the Monongahela River in a valley surrounded by hills. And it was home to steel mills, a zinc smelting plant, and there was all sorts of sulfuric acid, carbon monoxide, and other pollutants into the atmosphere. I've been putting it out there for years. During the 1920s, the owner of the zinc plant, Zinc Works, paid off local residents for damages caused by the pollution. But still, there was no regulation of air pollution that the industries were doing in those days. And so, Renee, about October 26th, the weather change there brought the fog, and it trapped all the pollution from the mills there, close to the ground. Most residents tried to evacuate, but the heavy smog and increased traffic made leaving difficult. Thousands flooded the hospital when they couldn't breathe. It wasn't until Halloween that Zinc Works shut down operations, and later that day, rain fell on Denora and finally dispersed it all. But by that time, how many people had already died from the killer pollution fog? This was like the days of real pollution, okay? Was it 8 people died, 20, 30, 2 rather, 32, 44, or 56? How many do you think died from the killer fog in Denora?
It's so scary. I'll say 32.
You'll say 32 right there in the middle. Not this time, but I appreciate you. Let's go to Tom. Tom's here. Hello, Tom. Not 32. 8, 20, 44, or 56. How many do you think died in that?
I'm going to go with 20.
You're going to go with 20. It's going to be a good day for you, Tom.
You're a winner!
You got it. Yeah. Over a five-day period, the smog killed 20 people in 4 days, and 50 more people died within a month from other respiratory issues. In addition, the smog sickened more than 7,000 people, 800 animals. The smog disaster in Denora got national attention when it was reported by Walter Winchell on his radio show, and afterwards, air pollution finally became a matter of public concern. And it led to the passage of the 1955 Clean Air Act. I didn't know there was a Clean Air Act back then, but I guess there was. Denora Zinc Works shut down in 57. Although the types of heavy pollutants responsible for the Denora killings have mostly been outlawed and eliminated, invisible pollutants such as ozone remain a threat. Of course, now what we're told here, Tom, is that carbon dioxide that we all breathe out, that is the real threat. Don't get me started on that, but... Hang on.
Well, a real threat, Bill, is the marijuana smoke's going to take over one day and smog us all out.
Could be. And we'll be just total paranoids, right? Hang on just a minute. We're going to send you to Diner 62, and I'll get your address, and we're going to have a great time.